Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, world. This is the Council of Elders Talk Show. My name is Dennison Brooks, and I'd like to welcome everyone to today's show. Today is August the 14th, 2021. And we have a guest on our show today, Mr. Tommy Cole from Lafayette, Louisiana. Tommy is the author, a comedian, actor, and he is a husband for 41, going on 42 years. But before we begin, let me just review a little bit about the Council of Elders concept. It's based on ancient African history, I guess you might say, where elders in the community wanted to encourage, help, guide young people in the community so that they would be more successful, would thrive, and would touch generations to come. So today, I'm going to introduce our guest, Mr. Tommy Cole. Tommy, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hey, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brooks. I thank you for having me on your show there. The jazz song that you were just playing, man, it really sounds good. I was sitting down here bouncing in my chair. Good music, man. Good music. And man, being a councilman, you know, to help others, man, you can't beat that, man. We should extend ourselves to others that they may make it in this world as well. So I like to commend you on your good works there.
Thank you, Tommy. Tommy, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, of course, you know my name is Tommy Cole. My mother called me by my middle name, Tommy Ray. And I'm actually from Lake Charles, not Lafayette. And I've been a resident here all my life. You know, I was born in Kinder, but then we moved here to Lake Charles, and I've been here ever since. Met my wife. Matter of fact, we were kids together, and they would, they would play outside and stuff like that. And by me being an outsider, you know, their first cousin was a dear friend of mine. But I go over to their house, and some things they wouldn't let me do. You know, I'm like, hey, wait a minute now. And so, but life went on. You know, we started dating about at 16. We broke up, and I was working for this cleaners, and I would deliver dry cleaners clothes. And I bought these clothes to this house one day, and here she was. She was grown. I'm talking about my wife. She grown up, and I mean, she looked beautiful. And I fell in love again with her, and we started dating in 1979, hey, we got married, and we got four children now, and, you know, and we've been at it for quite some time. So far as marriage, worked at a company called Carboline, retired now. After the end, you know, I started doing different things, trying to stay focused. You know, because it doesn't take much for you to lose your focus, you know. And the more you stay busy, you find out the less trouble you get off into.
Right. But Tommy, Lake Charles, Louisiana, how big a town is that?
Population about between 85,000 and 90,000 people.
Oh, okay.
Pretty small.
Well, that's a nice sized town. Big enough to have some things, but not super big, you know, where things get out of hand.
That's right.
The Lake Charles, I would imagine they have quite a few restaurants serving that Louisiana cuisine.
Oh, definitely, man. Definitely. You guys come on down. They may even have an alligator ready for you guys. Well, they cook them down here now.
Yeah, I was at a restaurant in Birmingham, Alabama. I forget the name of it, and I tasted some alligator. I'd rather have some good old catfish or something, though.
I hear you, man.
But I guess alligator is something that anybody can develop a taste for, you know, especially if it's cooked right. I know y'all probably cook it real good.
You have to cook it right there, man. And a lot of times, you know, you base it down with mustard. That way you get the wild taste out of it. And it tastes more like a cuisine then, you know. But if you just don't cook it, man, you're going to taste that wild taste.
Right, right. So have you ever cooked any alligator, Tommy?
No, but I've eaten a lot.
Oh, okay. I would imagine the people that like to cook, like the moms and grandmoms and chefs and things, they know what they're doing.
Definitely. Oh, yes. Yeah, Louisiana, you know, it's pretty much known for their, for the food here, you know, because people use different types of seasoning and boy, everything you eat down here, man, it's got great flavor, man.
Right. Well, now how far are you guys from New Orleans?
We're about 3 hours.
Oh, okay. That's a good little ways then.
Oh yes. New Orleans on the east south side, and we're here on the southwest side of Louisiana.
Right. Louisiana, they were part of the Confederacy, and so I would imagine you have a sort of a African American blend from the slave trade in Louisiana, just like they did in my state, Alabama and Mississippi and all that. Any museums or anything like that?
Well, they have museums. They have statues of folks. And, you know, a lot of those things have been torn down here because of the protests many blacks have made. Behind these statues
Confederate
general. Right, because the Confederacy, well, they lost the war, you know. The South won. Yeah, the South lost the war. Uh-huh.
I said, thank God they lost the war.
Yeah, right. Well, they lost the war, but watch this. Well, when America go to another country and fight that country and take that country over, you know, they don't let them place their flag back there. The United States place a flag there. And if they would try and place one, it would be an insult. It'd be another war. Where here, the Confederate folk, well, they lost, but they're still able to put their statues up and all these things here. And so, and that's the argument down here, you know. Like a Super Bowl champion, you know, the team that lost, you know, they can't be jumping up there talking about we the champs, you know, because they lost. So,
right.
So it's kind of like what it is, you know.
Right. Let me just say that we have on the show today Mr. Tommy Cole from Lake Charles, Louisiana. If you have any questions for him, you can press the number 1 on your phone, and we'll let you ask a question or make a comment. But tell me, I understand that in Louisiana right now, at least I saw in the news the other day, where you guys are having quite a bit of the virus still.
Yes, indeed, man. Yes, indeed. A lot of folk here, they don't want to take the shots, man. And they're not taking the shots, but, you know, a lot of folks are winding up in the hospital. Some doesn't make it out. And there are some been there a while now, and they may not make it out, you know. And it's bad to have that attitude because, you know, we have a shot. The shot may not prevent it, but it may slow it down where it doesn't have the same effect as if you hadn't had the shot. And I can't see why folk don't want to take it. You know, it's
right.
It's crazy.
So they're having quite a few that refuse to take it or don't want to take it.
Correct. And a lot of folks suffer for it because, you know, if someone catches it and that doesn't have the shot, well, they're going to pass it to someone else. And it keeps going on and on and on and on. And like a lot of folk, man, they really haven't taken a shot. So they're not only jeopardizing themselves, but lots of others, you know, like their children, family members, relatives, folk they work with, and you know, and man, hey, it's awful.
Right. Well, hopefully, you know, more and more people start taking the shots, and we'll get through this. But Tommy, I want to ask you a little bit about your books. I know you've written a couple of books. One on poetry and one sort of autobiographical. And I know last week we had people who were interested in writing books, and they had questions about how people wrote books, and maybe you can shed a little light on that too. Now, what was your first book?
My first book was In This Journey with Songs in My Heart. And that particular book, yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Tommy.
Yeah, and that particular book, I started off writing it. I was a Bible class teacher at the church where I worship, and I was in Proverbs, and I was teaching the kids about Proverbs, you know, and Proverbs has so much wisdom in it. And I studied that book, man, and I started sleeping at night, man, and like the Spirit of God would wake me up, you know, because it was on my mind. So I had to start writing it. And I started writing like that. And it started hitting me so much, I had to buy me a small little tape recorder where I can put it in my shirt pocket. And I went from there, you know, I record myself. I come back home and I type it up. And at night, man, sometimes I just get up. I write it down because sometimes I'm kind of tired. I don't want to get up and go to the computer, so I write it down. Then I come back and type it and all that. And before I knew it, hey, I had a book of poetry.
Right.
And now one time. I was invited to the school to recite some of my poetry. And they brought me to a class, and the lady was telling me, hey, look here, these folks here, you know, they're challenged. I said, okay. And so I did a couple of poems, you know, and one was called Everyone Has a Talent, is what it's called. And I recited that thing. Right. And about a month later, the teacher called me. She said, Mr. Cole, would you come back down here? I want to show you something. I said, okay. And I go back down there. And she had a little kid in her class. He wouldn't do nothing. She said, Tommy, this guy wouldn't do nothing. She said, but since you came here and recited some poetry, this young fella, he wrote a book and titled it Superman in the Neighborhood. And it was a real nice book, man. He had his drawings and everything. I'm like, wow. And so a lot of times folk don't know their talents, and you have to get somebody there to encourage them, you know, to get them to open up and realize,
right,
or recognize that there's some good things in them. And from there, man, hey, I was elated, you know, just to know that, hey, you know, like the Lord used me to encourage a young fella. Now, this was a while ago. I don't know how the young man is doing now, but the teacher has moved to Dallas there, so I don't guess she keeps up with a young fella neither.
Right. Tommy, looks awesome, like we have the 314 area code that wants to have a comment.
Okay.
Area code 314, you're live. You have a question for a comment for Tommy?
Good morning, fellas. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Yeah, that's a good story you have, but you're not going to make a comment? Are you talking about the statues?
Could you state your name and where you're calling from?
I'm calling from the Midwest and the South. My name is Mr. P, of Pianchi, whichever way you want to call me.
Okay.
Mr. Pianchi.
Yeah. And, you know, we got this thing about history, critical race theory, and that's in the headlines. But, you know, you talk about those statues were of American soldiers who fought in American wars. If you had the Spanish-American War, you had the Mexican-American War, you had the expedition in Mexico. So they wanted to associate them with just one particular war. That's what people done back in those days. You know, you had blacks that fought for the Confederacy that went on with Union soldiers to fight the Indian Wars on the Western Front. So I'm sort of against taking down history and blaming people for what they done at the time. I mean, that's just what people done. That's history. And it doesn't gain anything, actually. And I don't have no problem with a community if they want to do things. But, you know, up in Kansas City, Missouri, the people came out and voted to change the name of Martin Luther King on a street. So what's your comment on that?
Well, my comment is, and you're right, now that's history. And the history has a, how shall I say it, a lot of hatred in it. So, you know, when you look at the history there, you're somewhat looking at how people were mistreated, how people were used in the South. You know, because at one time we weren't even a human. You know, we was a fifth of a human. You know, we didn't have any rights. You know, many of us were hung, and so and all that's here in the South, and those statues and all these things here now represents a lot of that, and you have folk now even with their chest out, knowing the things they did to people, let's say of black people, and so it's somewhat of a pride for some folk. You know, they take pride in it because that's that history there, and they use that to even teach the upcoming generations. And so, and if you keep that stuff going on, you know, you're never going to get out of that part of history to where life would be improved equal to every citizen. And that's why the arguments here about the statues and the way things were conducted in those days.
Right. Well, That's an interesting, interesting topic. It actually hurts a lot of people's feelings to see statues. And when you understand that if these folks had won the war, where would we be now, you know, if the South had won? And so it's good to study history, but sometimes, right, they say that things like that belong in the museums rather than on the public square.
Right, right, right. Uh-huh. And, you know, looking at history, everything now, when you come to the political world and the signing and making of laws, you know, you have to look who making the laws. Now, watch this, my friend. Back in the early years when pilgrims first started coming here, and you had folks come from England. Now, these folks, they were prisoners, but they were sent here to work 7 years to get their freedoms, okay? And they were, a majority of them were white. Now, they came here, they worked those 7 years. Now, they got their freedom. And then when they got their freedom, well, they were crooks and thieves and everything already. And then they started applying their mischievousness to this country. And therefore, and that's how many things has been built up. You take like George Washington, the president there. Okay, now George wasn't a slave, but his father was a slave, an indentured slave. You follow me? So now you have to look at how, like myself, my father, I'd be more like my father than anything else. So now if they were thieves and crooks and all that, and then I come through that lineage, well, you'd have to understand that I'm going to pick up some of them things because I was taught that in that house. And so all these things come about like that. And I went to Magnesia, the university, and I was in a history class. And when I started reading up on it, wait a minute. I said, now George Washington come through the lineage of indentured slaves, you know. And the teacher didn't know how to answer me. You know, his father was an indentured slave, but he wasn't. I said, but he come along that lineage. I mean, whatever his father was teaching, he taught him. And so when he became president, that's what they pushed. And it's been like that from that time till now.
We have someone, the 916, that has a question or comment. 8473, would you state your name and where you're calling from?
Good morning, gentlemen. Ron Rogers.
Good morning.
Calling from Sacramento, California. And I more than agree with you, sir, on the statue recalling and tearing down and that type of thing, because we have to remember now, we supposedly put these statues up because they're heroes. They won something. The Confederacy did not win.
Correct.
There was no reason for them to be called heroes. Yeah, they died. But that was all done by the folks that backed them, and that was political. It's just like the money wasn't any good. Okay, it worked during the Revolution, but after the war, money wasn't any good. There was nothing to back it.
That's right.
So let's look at the real facts here. How many black soldiers, Buffalo soldiers, should have a statue somewhere?
That's right.
How many people from the Korean War, from the Vietnam War, they should have a statue somewhere. They were heroes.
Well, that's right.
We didn't win Vietnam, but we came on out of that. We just say it that way. So let's not make this any more confusing than what it is. They didn't win nothing.
Correct.
So let's stand up. That's another Black Lives Matter thing.
Right, right.
So,
Tommy, I'd like to talk a little bit about your acting career. Now, you've been in several movies. Could you tell us a little bit how you got into acting? And one thing that interests me is how actors remember their lines, because you see them, they got roles, and man, what do you do, sit up at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to memorize lines? Just tell us a little bit about how you got into acting, and then we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah. Well, I had a daughter. She was in college in Terrell, Texas, and like I say, I live here in Louisiana, and we went to spend a weekend with her. We come back that Sunday, and it's a six-hour drive from Dallas to here. And so when I got here, I was tired. You know, I jumped in the bed. I was going to take me a nap, and I'm sleeping, and I have a dear friend here. She's an older lady, and I drive her to the places she goes. She don't drive the highway. And she just so happened to call and say, Tommy, I need you to take me to Lake Arthur, which Lake Arthur is about 40 minutes from Lake Charles. I say, oh, Mom, I said, I'm tired, Mom. I say, I just come back from Dallas way, and I'm tired. I'm trying to get a little rest, you know, and She said, well, I got this guy up there in Lake Arthur. He wants to read some of my writings, because she's a writer too. Got some great books. And I said, Mom, I'm just too tired, Mom. I said, I don't want to go driving you and fall asleep on the road, you know. And I kept saying no, 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 till she fussed at me. She said, boy, get up out that bed and take me down to Lake Arthur. So I got up out the bed, and she said, get up out that bed and take me down to Lake Arthur, and you can audition for a part in the movie. So I got up, you know, and I took her out there, you know, and she went one way, and I went to stand in line. It was a very long line, and I'm the last guy standing in line. And I noticed when I got to the door, they had the white gentleman that was interviewing everybody. You know, he kept looking at me like he knew me. And so when I finally got up there, you know, he said, man, thank God, man. He said, hey, this is a black movie. You know, there's a bunch of white folk there before me. I said, well, I am black. So he laughed and stuff like that. And I got a background part. And before I can come out to work that background day, he called me again. He said, Tommy, we got a fella stepped out, man. Hey, we want you to come in, and we want you to take his place. He had a speaking role. So I said, okay. And I went on in, and had a little guy come sit with me. He said, okay, go over your line. He just gave me the sheet. He said, go over your line. And, you know, I'm just reading it, you know, because I've never been in movies before. I'm just reading it. And he come back about 5 minutes later. He say, let me hear you. I'm like, what do you mean? You know, he's looking for me to memorize that, you know. I didn't have it memorized. He said, I'll be back in 5 minutes. He said, try and remember this. So I got it, you know. So when he came back, he said, let me hear you. And so I recited it to him. He said, oh, yeah, you read it. It took me straight on set from there. And that was these two movie stars. One is a comedian, and the other guy, he did the Motel 6 commercial for a long time. The black guy had the coffee cup shaking in his hand. I can't recall his name right now. But anyway, I'm with these guys here, you know, and man, they were real nice, you know, and we worked together, and that's how I got my first role, being kind to a friend of mine. But before then, when I was young, I would tell my brother, you know, because, hey, I was athletic inclined and all these things, had good shape about myself. I told my brother, and he was pretty good, well-built too. He said, I said, listen, man, we ought to go down to California, man, see if we get in the movies. You know, he laughed at me. And that was like one of my dreams coming up. And it just so happened it was fulfilled that particular day, you know. And that's how I started, you know, just being nice to someone.
Right, right. And then you were a movie called Strange Fruit, I believe. That was an HBO movie or Strange Fruit.
Correct. Right. They showed it on HBO. That was my first movie right there. My name was Diesel in that particular movie. You know, if you guys ever seen it, you know, you saw me there. I owned the kitchen, you know, and these guys come in to make an order. And you know, it was one of these, what kind of movie would you say it is? This guy, he was an activist is what he was. And so it was that type of movie there. And it's a good movie, though. It made a lot of sense, you know, and there was a lot of killing going on, but that was the reason behind it.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you first mentioned Strange Fruit, I thought about the Billie Holiday song Strange Fruit, which was about about hangings back during the lynching days.
Right. Well, that's what the movie was about. People were being hung.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So for his memorizing the lines in the movie, you just have to sit down and think about it, I guess.
Yeah, you have to go over it, man. Go over it and over it. I worked in the movie they shot out of, it's a series they shot in New Orleans called K-ville. Now, Anthony Anderson was the main star in it. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
You recall that? Well, me and Anthony Anderson, you know, we were standing on the corner. You know, I'm right there with him, and man, the director would say cut, and boy, he'd pull out his little tablet and he'd constantly go over his stuff. Now, he was very good, but he worked hard at it, man. He had to go over and over the script to get it down to a science, you know. And that's how I started learning from Anthony Anderson. And he liked to play dominoes, so we all got a chance to mingle with him, play dominoes with him, sit down and eat. And he always loved singing and that song, And I'm Telling You, whatever the name of that song is. He's very joyful. He's a good guy, man.
Right. Was this saying Anthony Anderson that's on the hit show Blackish? Is that?
That's him. That's right. Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct.
Yeah. So was it a TV series or a movie?
That was a television series. That's right. K-ville.
Oh, okay. K-ville.
And then Hurricane Katrina came through New Orleans and busted all that up, man. Other than that, you know, I was working pretty regular on that show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I'd like to go back to your first book, Tommy. Well, the one, I've Been Through Hell. You talk about your family life.
Yes.
Hurricane Audrey. And
right.
Tell
right.
Us a
I was
bit
born.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was born in 1957, and like I said, we were staying up this way, and the Hurricane Audrey. Remember, it was a terrible hurricane at that time, and it hit about in June or something like that. I was about 3 months old. And, you know, people, man, trying to save their lives, you know, at that particular time, they didn't have, like, radars that can detect the hurricanes and all that. They just come up suddenly on you. And so that's how it happened. And, well, people running for their lives and stuff. And I was a baby, you know. They left me behind. And guy come, he got me out of a house that's floating. And the reason why I know, because hey, after I grown up, you know, they come back and told me, and I talked with the guy, and he told me. And he said, yeah, man, you was floating in the house, man. And so they got me out of there. And from there, which I wrote some of that in the book, I've Been Through Hell. And when I say been through hell, you know, you'd have to read the book to really understand that. Well, wow, man, one can really go through hell, not because people beating them down and shoving them and all that, but but because how people make assumptions, you see, and my life has been filled with assumptions. So, and therefore, it's an interesting story. I can try and explain it to you. That was my mother and father had broken up a while, okay? But at the time, before she left, she was pregnant with me. Well, when she come back home to my dad, you know, she had me. You know, I was in her arms, and my older brother, she was holding his hand. And so that story, you know, got out that, hey, no, well, I'm not a cold. But it didn't happen then, okay? And I was about 18 years old. I was about 18 years old, and I was going to my brother's place. He was in the military at Fort Polk, and he had an apartment, and he would bring me up there and our older sister. And, you know, she somewhat had an attitude, you know, like she was angry going up that way. And, you know, we was walking, we was going to his apartment, and she says, you're not daddy's child. You know, she called me another name and stuff like that. It cut me to my heart, man. I mean, tore me up. And I couldn't wait to get back home to ask my mama if was that true. She said, no, Tommy. She said, that isn't true. So now, you know, you're dealing with assumptions. And life goes on, you know. She had to spread this rumor out there. Lake Charles ain't but 85,000 people, you know, and everybody know one another, okay? So now you got all these rumors about me. And one day my father, because he seen how it disturbed me, but it disturbed him. And he told me, say, Tommy, he said, your mother was pregnant with you when she left. It's just that when she came back, she had you. You was born, she was holding you. And so that's the whole assumption about me. And I was just trying to emphasize in that book, you know, if you do have a child out of wedlock or whatsoever, you know, you don't want to wait till they're grown to where they can't accept such a task. You want to bring them up that they already know, you see, so they can accept it. You know, can you imagine you in high school and you in the 12th grade, and then the principal or somebody come by and says, hey, I run through your records. I seen you fail a couple of classes. We're going to have to put you back in the ninth grade. Man, that's going to cut your heart. Right. You worked all them years. You're in the 12th grade, and now they want to throw you way back in the ninth grade. That's 3-4 years behind.
And right, so right.
Tom, that's kind of like.
Let me interrupt you for a second. I have someone. Number 8473, I believe that has a question or comment. Caller 8473, did you have a question or comment for Mr. Cole? Caller 8473, question or comment. State your name and where you're calling from. Okay, I guess they didn't. So tell me, I'm a country boy from Alabama. They had a saying, mama's baby, papa's maybe. So it sounds like that was the kind of situation in the community.
That was it. That was it, you know, and
so you had to. I would imagine, did people tease you about it, or just pretty much?
No. They never teased me about it. But it's a lot of stuff that went on through there, because I got a chance to meet the fellow's children, whom they said I was his son as well. Well, you know, I got to know them, and I was in the ninth grade, and one of his daughters came. She was going to the same school with us. And she came up there, she brought a friend of hers. She said, hey, this is my brother. You know, so all those assumptions, you see, it led to one thing, to another thing, and all these things here. And so, you know, now when you have children, you see, it don't just stop at me. You know, this is a continued thing behind an assumption. So,
right.
And those things going on there. But I had to write it because it was on my heart, man.
Right. I see what you mean. Yeah. So, tell me, now you understand you did some prison ministry. How did
yes,
you get
sir.
Into prison ministry, and how long were you in it? And tell us a little bit about some of the activities of your prison ministry.
Well, I was in the prison ministry for about 15 years, and like I said, I was teaching a Bible class, and this is how I got introduced to the prison ministry. And the minister come to me and asked if I'd be interested in doing a prison ministry, you know, going up there and teaching folks at the prison. And so I volunteered myself, and we did that work for a very long time, man. And you know, in the prison, you know, you have some folk, you know, they're pretty much sharp in the Bible, but you know, they like to sometimes test you, you know, on all certain kind of things, you know. So it helps you to study and become sharper and all these things here. But yeah, and then some folks are just sincere, wanting to know the truth, that they might get themselves together. And you know, it's a whole lot of stuff. But it's like we're going into a mirror. You know how we do, like in the morning, you know, we go in the mirror, make sure our hair's right, our face is washed, and teeth are clean, and all this stuff. And we don't leave that mirror until we get everything right. You know, so, you know, when James, in the scripture, you know, when he speaks about like looking into a mirror, you know, when we look into God's will or God's law, you know, it's like looking into a mirror, and we shouldn't leave until we get it right. Now, watch this here. Now, it'll take us all our whole lifetime to get it right, so we should always be studying God's word, you know, so we can correct ourselves when we're wrong. But a lot of folks, because I had that problem too, man, I'd read that, and boy, it looked like, man, the Lord was going to sink me in because everything I did was wrong. But then after continue studying and improving yourselves, you know you find yourself better now than what you were then, and you just stay in it, man. You know, you stay in that particular mirror. And when I did the prison ministry, like I said, you know you learn so much, you know, because you got folk that are sincere, you got folk that you know, they want to question this and question that, and so you may have the answers, but oftentimes, well, I didn't have the answer, and I wouldn't lie to them. I'm like, well, I tell you what, I'm not sure about your question there, but I tell you what, next week, be here, be the Lord's will. He blessed me to come back here. I have your answer, you know. So it's like that, and it's a great experience, you know, folks. Folks obey the gospel through many classes, and you know that was some folk there. You know, they just wanted to question. You know, they try and throw you off and throw the people off. You know, like Satan would just throw them in the room with you. So but it was great though.
Right. So. 15 years, that's a long time to do
yes,
that.
Sir.
I would imagine you came into a lot of inmates. Probably some of them are going to be in there for life, and some of them are going to be there in and out.
Correct. Correct, man. Correct. I've seen it too where one guy, he had a lifetime sentence, but then they let him go, and he got in trouble with the police. He didn't want to go back to jail. Well, he took his own life, man.
Oh, boy. Rather than going back, he just took his own life.
He took his own life.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, a lot of that stuff, man. I mean, just to say this, I had folks question me and ask me, was it okay to masturbate? You know, huh?
Right.
Hey, man. Yeah. Well, but I'm just saying, well, you know, but biblically the answer would be, hey, because Paul, the Apostle Paul, says it in Corinth, you know, if a man can't contain himself, then he need to be married. You follow me? So, I mean, you're going to masturbate. I mean, hey, you can't contain yourself. So, you know, and it was stuff like that. But you try and answer folk because you don't want to beat folk up, but you want to try and be humble with it, that the Lord might open their heart and they understand. You see,
right?
But like I said, some of them fellas, though, man, they was, you know, they, well, I'm gonna throw this at them, you know, and I'm gonna throw this at them, you know, and all that. Well, I'm not gonna answer you on me, you know, but I'm gonna answer you with God's word.
Right.
And,
Right. Yeah. We got 12 minutes left. If anyone has a question or comment for Tommy, press the number 1 on your phone, and you can ask the question or comment. So, Tommy, I noticed on your resume you did some stand-up comedy. You did stand-up comedy?
Yes, sir. I did stand-up comedy. I had some voiceovers too, man. And, Ben, I had a pretty good act, man. I had folk, you know, rolling and everything. I acted like I was kind of like, I had this Indian guy, you know, he's from India and stuff like that. And this guy here, he went to, at least he was a janitor at this university. But the Indian, he was a veterinarian. Well, he tells the guy, the porter, he says, you know, he says, I have an animal, and he can talk. And I said, man, dogs don't talk. He said, yes, they talk. He said, you come to my office, and I show you. And so this guy went to his office, and sure enough, he had a dog come in because he would. He was more like a psychiatrist. And so, you know, they go in the room and the dog get there. He say, hey, dog, what's going on? And the dog just go to bark. Woof, 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 woof. So the dog started telling him about he need glasses. You know, he said, and all these things here. And he, you know, and we can go on. I'd make you laugh behind it. But anyway, they kept talking and talking, and the guy said, man, you can really talk to dogs. He said, yeah, I can talk to dogs. And the dog says, the reason why I need glasses was because when I jumped down in that cage, he said, I thought that tiger was a cat. So that's how people roared, man. Hey, they roared. And yeah, it was real funny though. And I got off. I did that a couple of times, man. But I was busy at the time doing working in film. And working in film, yeah. Oftentimes you have to have an agent. I started off, I didn't have an agent. Well, I got an agent. And that's when I really was working, man. I worked with Martin Lawrence, Cedric the Entertainer, what's his name there? The Librarian Four, Legendary with John Cena, Knucklehead with the other big wrestler, Big Show. Hey, man, I worked with some outstanding folk there, man. And and really got a chance to talk with Michael Douglas and a Double Take. I think that was the name of it, where he was in court. He was a lawyer, but they was trying to prosecute him in another courtroom. And it was really nice. Met some outstanding folk. Monique, you know, she had a baby. Her mother was there with her baby on set, and that was with Roscoe Jenkins. Welcome on, Roscoe Jenkins. Quite a bit of movies. The Staircase Murders, I was in two of those. And, you know, that's all Lifetime movies. And also to Racing for Time. They still show that on Lifetime. You'll see me on there, too. A lot of movies, man. A lot of movies. You see me in some of my out background, but I was featured, so they'd show me with the main stars, like Legendary with John Cena and all of them. I was a coach for the wrestling team, so when it first come on, you see me right there coaching the team. It's great though. But when it comes to writing, man.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I beg
your pardon.
When
it
comes to writing.
Did you go to California to make some of these movies, or did it most come to Louisiana?
No. They was all coming to Louisiana, man. I never left the state.
Didn't realize Louisiana was such a movie hub.
Oh, it definitely was. And like I said, when Hurricane Katrina came, that's when things started moving to Atlanta. You know, Tyler Perry is from here now, but he's in Atlanta now. And Atlanta got all the big work up there now. You get your agent out of there, and to get an agent, man, you just have to go online, Google up agents, acting agents. You'd be surprised. You know, if you have a nice photo of yourself and a nice resume. Oh, they'll pick you up, man. Hey, they've seen you out to work. But you just got to remember, man, you have to remember lines, but you just can't remember your line. You have to remember the lines of those whom you're communicating with because you have your, I'm not going to say that. But anyway, but when you have a dialogue with someone, you know, you have to remember their line so you can come in. Or the monologue is just you talking, okay? So dialogue and monologue, and you have to know all those things. You have to know your comments and everything, your period, and all those things, you know. And just to get it right, I mean, it's just not reciting something. You'd have to bring that character alive. Like I said, I've written a couple of gospel stage plays. And so I was able to direct too. And man, and all that stuff is important. You know, you have to know it all. You know, when the monologue or dialogue calls for a statement, you know, you have to make that statement, you know, or obviously shows to where you're a sinister, you know, sinister, he's a crooked fella. So you have to know all that because it's going to say sinister or whatsoever. So you got to know what that sinister mean and all that stuff there, you know. It's a lot of work involved. Uh-huh.
So for all the would-be actors out there, Tommy, you said that you have to get you an agent or a photo, resume and so forth, and who knows, you might end up in the movie.
That's right. But now, don't get me wrong. This is one job. You can be walking down the street, and a director might say, "Wow, that guy fit the character that I'm trying to find." And they call you right on in, and you got work. I mean, most of your actors now they have some college background. But you actually, man, just being in the right spot oftentimes, you know, will get you the job. Yeah. Like Morgan Freeman. Now I'm not for certain if he had any college background behind him, but he worked a long time backgrounding and all that But now you look at Morgan Freeman, man. Morgan Freeman, man, I mean, he outstanding.
Oh, yeah, Morgan Freeman is one of the top money makers in Hollywood.
Oh, man, he definitely is, man. But now it took him a long time because he's an older gentleman now. But by the time he was about 55, something like that, that's when he really started rolling.
Right, you know. So it takes time
and patience.
Right. Well, Tommy, we got about 4 minutes to go, and I know you about to celebrate your 42nd wedding anniversary. Anybody listening need some advice on marriage, being married for a long time? What would you tell them, Tommy?
Well, I tell them, first of all, you know, most folk that get married in church, you know, so when you get married in church, you're taking a vow in front of people. So they're going to witness what you're taking a vow to. And, you know, in those vows, you know, I promise to take care of you for debt, sickness, and health, and all those things there, you know. Good or bad, so you know you making that vow. People hear you, but now watch this here. But when you're making that vow, you actually making it to God, because you're promising God that you're going to cherish this particular person, regardless of the circumstances. Now, but a lot of marriages, you see, they forget that folk divorce, you know, and they forgotten that they made a vow to God. And many folks fall short. You know, hey man, marriage is a thing, man. It's you forever have to work on it. You know, it's not like you get to a point and it's all good. I mean, it's always work. You know, you have to sit down, you have to communicate. You know, you have to let some things go. Maybe you don't want to let them go, but you got to let them go sometimes. You know, you have to compromise, you have to forgive, you have to be forgiven, and all those things are in there, you know. And then when it seems like the devil is trying to step in, one of you has to be wise enough to say, baby, that's just Satan trying to tear us apart. You know, that the other one may come back spiritually and recognize it too. A lot of times, you know, we get to a point, we arguing, well, we don't care about what nobody else say or whatever. Now, it's me. It's all me. Well, it's never all you in a relationship. And folk have to remember that, man. It's, you know, it's two of you. And both of you got feelings and all this thing. And you have to respect and recognize one another.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And most of right, all, well, love one another, okay? Yeah.
Right. Well, that goes without saying. But tell me, we got about a minute and a half to go, and there are so many things that we could talk about, but an hour goes by so fast. But I just want to thank you for coming on the show today. Thank everybody for listening. We could talk about your acting for an hour. We could talk about your prison ministry for an hour. We could talk about your marriage advice for an hour. But we managed to touch on a little bit of everything. So I hope that you know, our people got something out of it. In the next 30 seconds, would you have any final comments, Tommy?
Yes, sir. First of all, Mr. Brooks, hey, I'd like to thank you for inviting me on your show. I thank all your guests. You know, hopefully we said some things that may uplift you and strengthen you, you know, that you'll be able to make some of them storms you go through. But more so, man, all that we do, man, hey, is God that provide these things and make these things possible. You know, without God, man, hey, we can't do anything. You know, we can't improve ourselves or nothing. But now it's all glory to God. But if you ever have me again, I'd love to sit down and share some scriptures with you. And I'm sure a lot of folks will have questions and all that too. But, you know, we use God's word to give the answers, you know.
All right, all right. Well, we have to wrap it up right there. And if you're listening next week, call 516-387-1611, 10 o'clock Pacific time.